We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Brunson, the pimps, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. It's Football Friday. Let's do this thing. CFL football, college football, NFL football. It's starting to get real in every league. The Cincinnati Bengals and the Pittsburgh Steelers put on a show on Thursday night football, in which was the fifth, you know, I guess it was debatable whether it was one of the oldest matchups. We saw different sort of rankings, that it was the fifth oldest matchup of starting quarterbacks in NFL history, that it was the second oldest matchup. But either way, the game ended up delivering, and the Cincinnati Bengals end up delivering in what turned out to be a pretty entertaining Thursday night football game. The sports calendar is off the hook right now. And I hate to say it, but it's sort of starting to wind down a little bit. And I look back on this, and I definitely haven't won as much as I would like with all these worlds colliding, but it's easier said than done, right? Like, people talk about, oh, I can't wait till there's midweek college football games. It's like, all right, then you got a Kappa New Mexico State, Sam Houston State game. Yes. So it's like, all right, yeah, there's games on, but are they all sort of best bets? But the Los Angeles Dodgers, what the Dodgers are doing right now, an incredible run for the Dodgers. And not just sort of this run, like right now, if you look back, the Dodgers are now up to 23-6 in their last 29 playoff games. So you're talking, think about that. Like, they played 29 playoff games, and they've won 23 of them. Like, the Dodgers just don't lose in the postseason. And if they do, they'll bounce back and they'll win the next game after they lose. Like, they rarely lose two in a row. It's going to be very difficult to beat them in a seven-game series. Let's be real. And Toronto and Seattle, I think this series probably is going to end up going seven. You can see these teams, how evenly matched they are. And so far, home field hasn't meant anything in the American League. Home ice hasn't meant anything in the National Hockey League yet either. I want to check in. We've been pretty much checking in on a daily basis with the NHL trends so far on the young NHL season. And it's absolutely incredible how dominant favorites have been, specifically road favorites. But favorites as a whole, if you're betting underdogs in the National Hockey League so far this year, you're getting pumped. All right. Favorites have won 64.8% of the time. So 46, 22, and 3. I hate the 2 and 3 stuff. So 46 and 22 and 3 are favorites so far this year. Road favorites have won 70% of their games, which is insane. Still a smaller sample size, but we're more than a week in right now, right? We're about 10 days in heading into the weekend. We're about 10 days in to the National Hockey League season starting. And this clip hasn't, like, dissipated. And in fact, it keeps creeping up a little bit. It was in the high 60s for most of the week. It's now at 70%. Road favorites in the National Hockey League have won 70% of the time. Away dogs have struggled. They've only won 39% of the time. So basically, it's favorites. Home favorites are 25-13. Home dogs are 9-18-3. So you figure the old classic, home dog on home ice has been an absolute money burner so far this year. As far as the totals are concerned, they're bang on. And in fact, it's almost unbelievable how bang on they are. There's been 34 overs and 33 unders so far this year in the NHL. Cam, the road teams and the favorites have been dominant so far in this young NHL season.
Yeah, it's been great. And there's a few that you're looking at the board tonight, Gabe, including your Vancouver Canucks, -130 favor on the road in Chicago. No, it's been great. Home ice in hockey, you know, you talk about these things and it's just hockey's one of those sports, Gabe. And it's, you know, I almost prefer to be the visitor a lot of the time and just to get a jump on these teams. I'm not sure if it's going to last forever, but you're right. It's a very, very nice trend and very, very good hockey so far, too. I've been watching a lot of these games and they're playing at a good pace and physical. Like, that's one thing about these guys. They don't take a lot of nights off, but great call by you. A lot of these road favorites are coming in. I don't know how long it's going to last, but yeah, we'll keep on riding it. There's a few I'm looking at tonight and tomorrow.
There's a lot of road favorites in the NHL. Well, not a ton. There's, you've got the Tampa Bay Lightning are road favorites tonight against the Detroit Red Wings, and the Vancouver Canucks are road favorites against the Chicago Blackhawks, albeit not a great spot for the Vancouver Canucks tonight. They were down 2-0 last night. Nice win for them last night. The Canucks were down 2-0 to the Dallas Stars in Dallas, and they ended up coming back and winning the hockey game 5-3 as they cash. It's like +150 underdogs on the road. But, you know, they're 2-2 on the season. They needed that win. It sounds crazy, people, like that it's this early in the NHL season, but NHL fans are the biggest psychopaths out of all sport. Like, out of the four major professional sports leagues in North America, hockey fans are like the most psychotic, and they're also the stupidest. Well, you know what? I don't know. No, you know what? I'd say NBA fans are the stupidest. Yeah. So I'm going to say NBA fans are the stupidest with their stupid takes and dumb trade ideas, and just they're dumb, right? The whole like NBA media sphere is dumb. NHL fans, I shouldn't say the word stupid because it's kind of the opposite of that. Like, NHL fans, no, like they're know-it-alls. Like, and I'd like to like really like take like Canucks Twitter, and for all their jackass comments, and show up at their house with a pair of skates and say, lace these up and let's see you play hockey. And I'm not like doing the old, oh, you're not as good as the guys on the Vancouver Canucks, but I'm telling you, Cam, there's people that have never played ice hockey.
Yeah, never even put on a pair of skates.
Yeah, like they can't even skate and they run their mouth. It's like, shut the F up. You couldn't even like hit the puck if you were 2 feet in front of the net. You couldn't put it in the net. Like you don't even know. Like, you know, like it just bothers me. And I don't listen. I'm not saying, you know, look, I didn't play in the NFL and I'm critical of players in the NFL. So I'm not saying you can't be critical or have an opinion on things, but just the low brow dumb comments that are made, it enrages me. And the Canucks kind of bring it upon themselves, but dude, it's three games in and they're just like going after Evander Kane constantly. EP40's a bus. He's terrible. He sucks. They played three games, guys. Right? They played three games. And, oh, I can't handle Evander Kane. If I see him, you know, do one more cross-ice pass, I'm, you know. It's a couple of games. Like, Canuck fans are literally the worst. Like, it's suffocatingly annoying on Twitter with Canuck fans. So, basically, it was almost like a must-win for them to shut these losers up. And the best is, too, the Canuck fans get mad at me. And they're like, oh, what do you know? You know, you don't know what we've been through over the years. Like, they actually think, Cam, because they lost once in a Stanley Cup final in Game 7. They're like, they've been wronged. Leaf fans have that about them. You guys have that too, Leaf fans. We deserve it more somehow. We've been wronged. Like, our heart's been broken more than other people's.
What, you blaming me?
No, just Leaf Nation as a whole.
No, you're right. They got to relax.
Like Kevin Bieksa said, he goes, I don't know why Leaf fans think they should win more than others. It's like,
that's true. I agree.
There's other good teams in the league. Mm-hmm. But Leaf fans feel, oh, we've been through such more than everyone else. Whatever, dude. Buffalo Bills have never won. So, like, I see people.
I'm a Sabre fan, too, Gabe. Like,
people
that
crying.
City.
People crying about the Leafs and, like, the Canucks. Oh, you know what Canucks fans have been through. It's like, dude, I'm a Buffalo Bill fan. Like, there, you can't be through anything like worse than being a Buffalo Bill fan. But I don't panic three games into the season every year, right? You wait for the year to play out. You bitch about it when the season's over. But Canuck fans can't wait. Like, they just start panicking early and flipping out early. So big, and I thought, listen, it'd be better for the Canucks to get on the road, actually, and get away from these psychopaths. But now they got the Chicago Blackhawks tonight, who are basically, you know, playing really good hockey so far this year by their standards. 2-2-1 for the Blackhawks. We gave it a Hawks over 67.5 points for their season point total. They're one of the teams that I thought were going to be improved this year. Should be noted, the Hawks are without Nick Foligno now. So we talked last week about how Foligno got into a fight in the first game of the year, just sort of let the team know and set the table for the team. And he told the younger players on the team that, listen, we've got your back. You know what? You're not alone doing this, because, you know, all these kids kind of feel alone in this stuff at times. So Foligno really took on a big leadership role with this team. But unfortunately, his daughter has a very severe heart condition.
Horrible.
Like a baby. So he's left the team to deal with family issues. And speaking of which, Rob Vino not with us, dealing with family issues in Connecticut right now. So we wish Rob the best. But I like the Canucks last night against the Dallas Stars. I thought, you know, there was a good sort of play last night for them. Tonight's tricky, though. You're going back to back. The Blackhawks have been pretty good. They've been in every game. Like, if you look at the Blackhawks so far this year, they smashed St. Louis. They beat Utah. They lose by one to Montreal. They lose by one to Boston. They lose by one to Florida. Amazing. The Chicago Blackhawks haven't lost a game by more than one goal yet this year, and they've won a couple of games now. So you got to give them credit for at least, you know, competing. I think, listen, Bedard is playing a lot better this year. Not that he was bad before. He's only 20 years old, right? He was 19 last year. So he's 20 years old now. You can sort of see he's stronger on the puck. Like, he used to get knocked off the puck a lot. See, he's stronger on the puck right now, Bedard. Number two, Bedard, as a rookie in last year, kind of like he didn't fully understand what you can and can't do in the NHL. In the sense that Bedard used to do the sort of like four steps ahead of everybody else passes type of deal, because he's used to, like, he's got this crazy, he's got like a Wayne Gretzky vision type. Like, some of these kids, they just see things that other people don't ahead of people. So Bedard's one of these people that he's a few steps ahead of you all the time about, like, what's going to happen? Where's the puck going to go? Like, where should I be? Right? Like, he really gets it. But he used to often, I noticed last year even, he would often sort of pass or put the puck in an area and expect his teammates to understand what his vision was. And they didn't. And I said it at the time. I'm like, Connor, like, dude, like, it, like I said, it's almost like Van Halen playing with a Van Halen cover band. It's like, you know what I mean? This is how we really do it. And his teammates didn't really see it. And the other thing is, too, he wasn't good enough to be doing that stuff. So, you know what I mean? Like, he'd be in front of the net, and he'd try like a behind-the-back pass to somebody. It's like, Connor, you know what I mean? How about you score? How about you shoot? How about you establish yourself a little bit here before we try all these YouTube trick sort of plays? Like, that's my, I guess, the best way of putting it. Like, Connor's like a YouTube kid. Like, he literally watches YouTube hockey videos all the time, and he copies stuff. Like, so he'll be like, I want to see what Mario Lemieux does. And so he'll watch Mario Lemieux, and then he'll spend like 36 hours in a row copying Mario Lemieux's play or move or stick handle or whatnot, which is super cool, right? I mean, the kid is like, he's like a robot in which he just picks things up. But I don't know, it's like a football team with a complicated playbook. Like, simplify it a little bit, Connor. Just, you know, get the puck at the net, just shoot the puck more. And he's doing all that. So, like, the sort of crazy to nowhere passes aren't happening as much anymore. He's stronger on the puck now in the corners. He's not getting knocked off the puck anymore as much as he was, because he was a smaller 18-year-old kid before. So it's fun to watch the development of Connor. Still early in the season. But I'll tell you what, like, five games in right now, if we say, is Connor Bedard playing well enough to be on Team Canada's Olympic team? You know, you'd be saying, you know, we're getting there, right? You got defensive liabilities. He's still small. Like, there's still some things to look at. But he's battling. He doesn't have a job on the team now as it is, right? You've got the Four Nations face-off team that was last year, the Team Canada team that won. They might bump a guy or two, but for the most part, it's going to be that team, right? Like, you know, Brad Marchand, it's a few guys are on the bubble again. And, but they're allowed to bring five extra guys to the Olympics than it was on that team. So it opens up the door for the Nick Suzuki's. Like, basically, I think Connor Bedard is kind of competing with Nick Suzuki.
Good call.
Like, to get on the team. Like, if you look, like, the other guys are already on the team, so it comes down to sort of, all right, who's, like, who didn't make the team last time that's sort of on the bubble right now? And it would be Connor Bedard, Nick Suzuki, Tom Wilson, but Tom Wilson's not the same. Like, Tom Wilson, different player than Suzuki and Bedard is. So, I'm just stating that tougher spot for the Canucks tonight. I wouldn't be surprised if this game went to overtime and was like I said, all these Blackhawk games have been super close.
They showed guts, Gabe. That's the thing. Dallas had a lead in that game, and, you know, Vancouver could have packed it in, but they came back. And to our earlier point on the shows earlier in the week, they started shooting the pucks, and they know their old backup goaltender, Casey DeSmith, pretty well. So I thought it was a really gritty win by Vancouver, and sometimes those gritty wins, you know, you got a good bounce in your step. You go into Chicago. And the thing about the Blackhawks, too, is beating the Blues 8-3 is shocking. Like, that's the whole thing. Like, the progress this team has made in a short period of time, it's actually really special. Like, you're right. Like, they're in every single game. They try hard. The loss of Foligno will hurt because he's kind of like a sandpaper guy with that team. You know what I mean? He sticks up for guys. He fights. He does a lot of the little things. But, yeah, Vancouver, they could pull it again. And I guess that's why it's a short price, because the bookmakers know the Blackhawks are a lot better this year.
Yeah, they have their losses have all been by one goal. Mm-hmm. So they've been in every game. The worst period of hockey that the Blackhawks played this year was the first period of the season against the Florida Panthers. Mm-hmm. And we took the Blackhawks plus a goal and a half in that game, and it wasn't looking good early. But it was basically, as I told the story before, after the Foligno fight at the end of the first period, the Blackhawks were just sort of a different team, like, in the second period. In the first period, they looked like, I was thinking, oh my God, I just did a video and broadcasted to the world how I like the Blackhawks over 67.5 points. And I'm watching the Blackhawks play and I'm thinking, oh my God, they look like a Western Hockey League team. Like, they look like a junior hockey league team in the first period of the season this year. They look like kids. They look small. They look kind of nervous and intimidated by the Panthers. They were getting, it was like kids. Like, it was like, get the F off the puck, kid. Like, the Panthers would just sort of come and push a Blackhawk. Like, give me the puck, kid. And there was nothing the Blackhawks could do about
it. True.
And that was the first period of the Panther game. And like I said, then Foligno got in the fight with Greer, and it calmed the Blackhawk bench got calmer after. Like, they kind of settled in. And I don't know. I think, you know, they just basically said, all right, let's just play our game now. And whatever happens, happens. Look, they got outshot like 39-18 or something. It was bad. Like, Spencer Knight, that's another thing, too, with the Blackhawks this year, that they're going to be in games because their goaltending is really good now. Spencer Knight's a good goalie. He could never really wrestle the number one job in, you know, from Bobrovsky, but, you know, Bobrovsky's a hard guy to beat.
Exactly.
Right? So Bobrovsky was shaky for a while, and they said, all right, maybe Spencer Knight can take over. He never really did, but now he's one of these dudes in Chicago where he's the main man now, and he's a good goalie, Spencer Knight. I've always been a fan of his. You could tell just, you know, when you watch, if anybody knows anything about goaltending, when you watch Knight play, you're like, yeah, this guy, like, he's got good skills, fundamentals, movement, etc. Just one of these dudes that needs a chance to become the starter to play. So, props to the Blackhawks. They're going to be a fun team to keep our eye on.
They're going to miss Spencer Knight. I know Bobrovsky, he's not getting any younger too, right? So I don't know what goaltenders they have in the wings. Lyon used to be their backup goalie. He's gone. But Spencer Knight, you said it, 920 save percentage. This kid's on fire. There's a reason he was a first-round draft pick, and he's living up to potential now. And I agree with you. Big kid, 6'3". I think he's going to be special.
He's been around a while, right? So, like I said, he's finally getting a full chance to play. He's going to keep them in hockey games. That's the thing. One thing with the Blackhawks, too, it's a good bet. They're a little bit better at it, but they still gave up a ton of shots on goal. So do the Vancouver Canucks, actually. So it's actually a battle of teams that are kind of bad fundamentally defensively. And Spencer Knight's prop is 23.5 as far as saves tonight, which normally I'd be like, yeah, bet the over of that. But the Canucks don't get that many shots on goal. Like, it's a fault of the Canucks. They don't. And it's been the same way with three different coaches, like Bruce Boudreaux, Rick Tocchet, Adam Foote. It's the players. People like to blame coaches all the time, but it's the same players on the Vancouver Canucks for the most part that it is who they are. Like, they don't, they're not like flick the puck at the net, bang it in type of guys. They're more, let's pass it around and we need a one-timer and let's do the cycle thing and tee it up from the same effing spot that we tee it up from all the time, that the goalie knows where you're going to shoot from. Like, Pettersson does the same shot, the same thing every power play. Like the Canucks, like, they wing it around and he tees up a slap shot from the right face-off circle and he inevitably misses the net or it gets stopped all the time. Like, I'm not an NHL goalie, and I'm there three steps ahead of them. Like, and that's bad. Like, if I'm sitting on my couch and I'm watching a Canucks play, and I'm like, yeah, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and if I'm the goalie, I'm going to slide over here because I know you're about to pass it over there, and then they do it. And it's like, for the love of God, guys, like, mix it the F up a little bit. Like, if I was the Canucks, just how about surprise a goalie? Just tee it up at his head. I'm dead serious. Like, tee it up at his head, let it bounce off his face mask and bang it in, like, even NHL goalies flinch, guys. I'm telling you, like, you'll see if you actually can see, like, the goalies, they have their eyes closed half the time. Like,
you'll see how fast that puck's coming in, Gabe. It's human nature. You have to blink. Like, that
thing is
like, fast.
They're blinking. They can't see. The other thing is, too, like Cam said, sometimes the puck is just too fast that you don't even have time to react. Nope. So the puck's just sort of like goalies in the NHL nowadays. They're very positional. I saw, who's the guy? Colby Armstrong. Colby Armstrong has he's got a feature during the intermission on the games or whatever. On the couch with Colby Armstrong. And they bring a couch out onto the middle of the ice and they sit on a couch. But Colby Armstrong suits up. So he's in uniform and he's got like the player that he interviews is in uniform. And he had a goalie on. I forget who the goalie was. He had a goalie on like 2 days ago. And it was really cool, actually. Like, see, I'm a goalie, but like to see like what the goalie said about like angles. And he basically said, he goes, you know, in the old days, I know goalies used to come out and cut the angle and all that. And he goes, you can't do it now. And he actually showed why. It was really cool. And he said, he goes, look at this. He goes, if I come out of my net too much, I'm leaving this space open. And he showed the spaces. And he goes, the guys in the NHL are able to hit those spots. But Armstrong was like, yeah, but you're cutting the angle down more here in this. And how come, like, you know, you don't want to come out more? Because Colby told him, you know, in my day, goalies would come out of they were standing, like, near the crease. And he said, in my day, goalies would come out more and challenge the shooter more. And he said, yeah, I get that. And he goes, but watch this. And the goalie did a great demonstration. He goes, all right. So Colby Armstrong was in the slot with the puck, like center ice slot type thing. And the goalie said, all right, I'm going to come out and challenge you. And he goes, sure. I just blocked a lot of angles. And then he showed the space that was behind him in the crease. And the goalie said, he goes, if you pass the puck now, he goes, I will not be able to get back into the slot to stop this. Actually, I think it was the dude on the Sabres they were talking to. No, it was Allmark. Yeah, it was Allmark.
Yeah, Linus Allmark. You're right.
It was Linus Allmark on the Senators. It was a Senator game the other night. Senator Sabres. So it was Linus Allmark. Really funny guy, Allmark, in real life. I didn't know that. I've never seen him in interviews before. So
it's a piece of work.
Well, you've seen him do an interview? I never
yeah.
seen him.
Oh, yeah. No, I see even in scrums and stuff, Gabe. Yeah, I know. I've done a scrum when I did some stuff in Linus Allmark's a comedian. Like, the guy's actually pretty, like, he's a pretty funny guy. He's got a lot of personality. You don't really see him that much, but he does.
Yeah, he was smart as far as breaking the goalie stuff down. So, like, he basically, you know, it was really cool. Like, you could see, like, if this guy was at a goalie camp, that you'd be like, wow. Like, he really, really sort of, like, emphasized stuff very clearly about what you can and can't do. And he showed, he goes, you come out too far, the crease is wide open. And he goes, then you're going to have to do this. And he sort of showed you how you got to, like, panic. It's, like, sort of like panic mode. And they showed him making these panic mode saves in the NHL. And, like, he goes, you don't want to have to do that. And it was funny. Like, the amount of space that is out there, it really put it in perspective, actually. Like, it was a really good segment. Like Colby said after, he goes, I hope I just showed you what a shooter sees and what a goalie sees. And he goes, for both of us, it's not easy, right? Like, with the equipment so big, man, those pads, there's really not a lot of net to shoot at. You get these goalies, they're 6'3" now. They're wiry, sort of like I was, right? It's a good body build for a goalie. 6'2", 6'3", long, lanky, right? You take up a lot of the room. You stretch out. You take up the net type of thing. And now you throw in these dudes are big now, and then you throw in their effing pads, and there's no net there to shoot at anymore. I've been more critical of players, Cam, thinking, you know, you should be able to shoot there and here and stuff, but you need to, like, basically be pinpoint accurate to score in the NHL now, unless the net is, like, you get a lucky bouncing goal.
You're so right, Gabe. And take a look at what
that's why
guys.
It's hard. I'd almost go back. That's why it's hard for the Canucks. And, like, if you live like that, it's hard, man. Like, goalies are good. They have the angles down now. They're not stupid. Their goalies are smarter than they've ever been. And if you're a player and you're just trying to always do, like, the perfect goal, man, it's hard to do. Like, you got to get lucky and just sort of flick the puck at the net, I think.
Gabe, you meet these old timers in real life? Like, we met Billy Smith. The guy looks like a jockey compared to these new goalies. Like, I'm dead serious. Why do you think he came out with those pads and all that other stuff? There's nothing you can do. You sit in the net. The guy's got top, bottom, side, whatever, five. He had to cut the angle. That's the only thing they could do. Now, as a goaltender, you don't want to come out as much. You almost take up the whole net. So it's a totally different philosophy from goaltending. And guys are way bigger now, like way bigger than they were before. Some guys were small.
Yeah, the philosophy of goaltending changes like every, I don't know, 20 years, 10 years. But you had the old days, the old stand-up goalies. When I played, I was a kid in the 70s into the 80s. The whole fundamental thing was don't go down unless you have to. Right, like we were taught, like don't flop around like Mike Palmateer. Like Mike Palmateer, the Leafs used to just flop around everywhere, and I liked it. It was sort of like street hockey style.
Yeah,
but if you notice, like Ken Dryden, like stood up all the time. It was basically like cut off the angle, don't go down because if you go down, they're gonna beat you high. Don't go down unless you have to because you're gonna lose control. You're not in control when you're on your knees. That got thrown out the window with Patrick Waugh and Martin Brodeur and those guys with the butterfly. Francis Allaire, the Montreal Canadiens goaltending coach, his French guy from Quebec, invented like he was a goalie coach. And he basically invented the butterfly, which Patrick Waugh played, which was you play from your knees. So instead of standing up, no, you play from your knees and your legs and you sort of move like a butterfly. Your legs are like, that's why they called it like a butterfly. And, you know, you think of Brodeur and you think of Waugh and you think of them sort of sliding around on their pads and their knees through the crease and stuff. But you were vulnerable high, right? You were vulnerable high there. And the modern goalie, Cam, they said F your butterfly and F all your, like, they were like, no.
Screw you, Hasek. Yeah, we're
Well, Hasek was freestyle. He was freestyle. Nuts.
Yeah.
Hasek was like, a nightmare if you were a goalie coach. Like, you were like, he did everything you weren't supposed to do. They were like, no. Like,
and well.
Yeah. Like, Hasek would be lying on his side, like backwards with his hand.
Gabe scissor saves. He is the best scissor save guy. Like, you know, like one leg up, puck out. Like, I'm like, what the hell is this guy doing? He's like dancing. Like, no, he did just watching Hasek videos. I go through, like, the guy's unbelievable. Like, his acrobatics were, you're right. If you're a coach, you're like, no. But it works for him. Some guys, Hasek, it doesn't work for.
Hasek sort of had like a soccer style goalie. Like, whatever it takes to keep the puck out of the net. Like, sort of like die, fall, roll over, stand up, butterfly. Like, he played it all. He was just basically like a street goalie. Like, the puck's not getting past me. I don't have technique, but you're not getting it past me type of deal. Great goalie. I want to say it doesn't have technique, obviously technique, but his style was kind of control chaos that he's like, no, I don't. Like I said, like, he did a lot of very unconventional things in the net that a lot of people would not be able to get away with that he was able to. But nowadays, man, I tell you, like, Cam, these goalies, they're good now, these guys. I don't think I gave them enough credit, to be honest, over the last couple of years. The modern goalie in the NHL, I kind of always thought, you know what? The size of the effing pads that you guys have now, you should stop the puck. And the amount of shots that are blocked now, that's another thing too. Like, it's freaking hard to even get a shot on net in the NHL now. It's really hard to get it past the defenseman, and it gets tipped, blocked, deflected. It's hard. So I always thought goalies kind of had it kind of easier than people thought in the modern NHL. Like I said, I've been on the ice, I've been up close, and I remember I just saw Carey. I was sat right behind Carey Price a couple of times, and I was like, he doesn't know where the puck is half the time. I really realized. And even after the game, he admitted. He goes, yeah, I didn't know where the puck was on that save. Like, he admitted it. Like, I don't know where it is. And he basically said, it goes so fast, sometimes you don't know where it is. And he goes, you got to rely on your positioning. And he goes, you just sort of feel it when it hits you. Right? That's why you'll notice, guys, a lot of times you'll see a goalie kind of looking behind him, around him, can't be, like, even if he has the puck.
Exactly.
Like, bro, it's in your pads, but he doesn't know. It's like you saved it. He's looking around, and I said,
pads are so thick, you can't even feel the thing. It's like freaking like a bed.
You've seen it a couple of times a game. Like, the goalie has no idea he stopped the puck, right? It's coming in 108 miles an hour. It's a little piece of black rubber. Like, it's physically impossible to, like, move that quickly. So, like I said, they'll just teach you. Don't effing move when they're on them. You know what I mean? Be here. And, you know, this is our – very analytical. Like, I hate to say it, but – it's very baseball analytics, like, right? If you stand here, you'll only give up a goal this bird. Like, they have all the percentages, like, on a pie, on a chart, basically, with the net of this is where you're vulnerable. Don't do this. Don't do that. Make them beat you, right? But I'd like to get a goalie on, actually. I'm going to try to track down a goalie, an ex-pro goalie, talk about the changes of being a goalie. In the NHL, because I wasn't in the NHL, but I can tell you about the changes of being a goalie. All right, so speaking of NLs, the NFL this week. I'm not really feeling it this year in the NFL. Every week, I'm sort of like, yeah, okay, but I get more of a kick out of college this year for whatever reason. It sort of alternates with me, every year I feel different about it, but I'm enjoying the college football scene more than the NFL scene this year. Just because, I don't know, like, the games suck. You know what I mean? Am I going to get excited about, oh, I can't wait to see the Dolphins and Browns play. Can't wait to see the Panthers and Jets play. Even though I do like the Panthers in that game, incidentally. Garrett Wilson's going to be out for the New York Jets, amongst others. They're just a disaster. Don't look now, but the Carolina Panthers have actually won 3 games this year. Pretty impressive. 3-3 football team.
Yeah, they are. The question for Carolina is, can they win away from home? That's this year, their issue. And the Jets, just everything's got wrong, Gabe. You watch Glenn and see at the end of the half they're not getting points, and him and Wilson, they're barking at each other. Like, it just seems like this team's lost in every area. I got to be honest with you, and it's not a slander on Justin Fields, but when I think about it, I think they'd be just as good with Tyrod Taylor. I don't know what your opinion is, but I can tell you one thing. He throws a more accurate ball, and he can still move. Like, Fields, the relationship between the team, I understand the offensive line does have issues, but he also misses so many damn open guys, and it's killing this team.
Oh, they're better with Tyrod Taylor. There's not a doubt. But this is, you know, Justin Fields, he's got his flaws. And now this is going to be the end of the line for him, which is too bad in a way. Mm-hmm. He's not going to get a starting quarterback job again after this.
No.
Right? There was people. He was in Chicago. They blamed him. He goes to Pittsburgh. They're winning games with him, and they still didn't want him. And I've defended Justin Fields a lot. He is who he is. It's the thing is, what the Justin Fields' problem is, he can't be taught what he does wrong. You can't teach. Like, there's a few things you can teach, right? When Josh Allen came out of Wyoming, a lot of people, like, mocked the pick and stuff. They were like, this kid is very raw. He didn't play against high competition. And the big knock on Josh Allen was he was super inaccurate in college. Like, if I don't know, he completed like 54% of his passes or something only. Like, he was very inaccurate. And, you know, the defense was sort of, listen, he was on the Wyoming Cowboys. He was trying to make plays. And he was the best player on the team. And he didn't have, like, good talent around him on Wyoming. So he was just trying to throw the ball up there and making plays. He didn't care about the completion percentage or the accuracy type of thing. But it was true, but it was also true that Josh wasn't accurate. Like, Josh had bad footwork. So Josh Allen now, you know what? He's kind of like, I hate to say it, but he's got a lot of bad habits this year again suddenly. But my point is, you can teach accuracy, right? There, you can teach footwork. You know what I mean? You can teach. There's a lot of quarterback skills that you need that NFL coaches and quarterback coaches can teach a quarterback. Don't do this. Just this is what you do with your feet. Don't throw with that angle like that. Like, there's a lot of things you can teach. You can't teach someone to read a defense. Like, you can show them game film and – if they don't get it, they don't get it. And they can say they get it, right? You can, like, even on film, you can go, okay, where do you go here? What do you do here? It's not the same when it's going fast and the bullets are live. And Justin Fields just does not see the open wide receivers quick enough. Like, there's a bunch of plays. Like, he's not the only one, but, like, quarterbacks like him, you know what I mean? Like, he'll drop back. And the play is designed for like a 1-2-3, boom, bam, right? Drop back, hit him in stride, boom, over the middle, crossing route, bam. It's timing. And like Caden Salter is a good example on Colorado. You know, kid's athletic, he runs around, he's fun to watch and stuff, but same thing. It was late in the game, and you saw Deion got really upset on the sidelines. And Deion said he was wide effing open. He was wide effing open. He kept saying that like four times over, like out loud, because it was like a fourth down cab and the game was on the line. And Colorado ran two receivers over the middle, like on a crossing route. Both of them crossed each other and they were wide open. So it was like, man, like the play call works. So like, if you're the coaching staff, you're like, man, we designed it. We called it. We drew it up. It was perfect. He didn't throw the ball. Not only did he miss it, Salter, he didn't throw it because he double-clutched it. And then he threw it like a second after type thing. It was too late. And it was like they showed like he just missed it. It was there and he missed it. Like he didn't see it. It was too late. If you watch the Jets and Justin Fields, it's constant like that. Where it's like, bro, Garrett Wilson was open. But you took too long. Like, you didn't throw it when you were, like, we told you to throw it on five, not on seven steps, but on like five steps.
Not on 11.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Don't hesitate, bro.
He always hesitates.
But he's unsure of himself. Like, he's almost like, no, it's not open. It's like EJ Manuel, another one. EJ Manuel is like that on the Buffalo Bills. EJ Manuel, man, this kid had a cannon. Like, he could throw it and he was accurate as hell. Like, he could hit, like, a target on a barn from, like, 100 feet away, like, you know, 100 yards away type thing. His problem was that target had to be stationary and wide open. Like, EJ Manuel didn't anticipate. Like, that's the term, the best term, like, to say. Like, Justin Fields doesn't anticipate. Like, just, you know what I mean? When you see a quarterback and a wide receiver, Cam, and they're like, he threw it and the receiver wasn't even there yet. Like, he threw it to a space and then boom, the receiver arrived at the space as the ball did. Because the quarterback read it, anticipated, sees the open space, where to throw the football. Guys like E.J. Manuel, Justin Fields, like these college
Jamarcus
guys.
Russell, like he was a guy, he could, his arm was a cannon, but he had problems. Newton. Yeah, Cam Newton, but agreed.
Another, basically like shotgun quarterbacks in college that sort of freelance in college. When I get to the NFL, it's a problem because nobody's open in the NFL. So like in the NFL, you have to anticipate and you have to throw in the tight spots. And if you don't have the confidence and you're gun shy to pull the trigger immediately, you'll get intercepted. Like, you need to accept, I might get intercepted here, but I got to throw it right now. And Fields, that's the thing. Like, Fields won't turn the ball over a lot because he doesn't take chances. Like, so, you know what I mean? I think I could win with Fields if I was a coach and on a certain team. I think you can. He's not terrible. But if you put him on the Jets in a bad situation, you're just begging for disaster. And here we are right now. So what are your best bets in the NFL this weekend?
Gabe, I really like Philly to bounce back against Minnesota. I know they've been underachieving. The play calling's been bad, but I think this is a spot for them. I really like the Eagles this week. Tampa Bay always plays Detroit tough, but I'm going to take the Lions -5.5. I'm also liking the Seahawks again. Line's gone down to 3 against Houston, and I think Denver absolutely gets it done this week. Not a very good performance overseas, but I think they absolutely just smoked this week. I'm also looking at some leans right now. I might take a shot with the Saints again. They've been pretty gritty. I know they lost last week. That's what's on my NFL board right now.
It's a tricky card this week in the NFL. A lot of injuries to dissect. I like Carolina to beat the New York Jets. I'm surprised this total is as low as it is at 41.5. Carolina's offense is good. Their defense is not. This is sort of like ultimate. You know, it's nuts, actually. Aaron Glenn could get fired, the Jet coach. He probably should, to be honest, because it's going to be a disaster, and we all know it's not going to end well for him. You shouldn't just hire every coordinator of the successful guys in the NFL. This is a problem with the NFL. They just hire every coordinator all the time. But they probably should fire him. But the thing is, you're going to fire the guy midseason. It's going to reflect very poorly on the organization that they keep on firing coaches. Like, eventually it's like, well, you're the one that keeps making these decisions. Right. But the Jets are a clown show. Like, they should be relegated to the CFL, the New York Jets. And I'm not even sure they would win in the CFL.
They look too much like the Riders, too. That's a problem.
Change, you know, you uniform. Can replace them. You can put Riders in the Jet uniform. Yeah, exactly. They should do that. See what happens.
Put
the Riders
Jets
in there against the Panthers and see if they could do better than the Jets can. And I think they could probably do about the same, to be honest with you. Colts and Chargers, another tough really game. Interesting game this week. I think the Chargers are going to get it done against the Colts. They're similar style football teams. I think Harbaugh will be able to game plan for him. College of football, we're going to be on Saturday at noon. And great slate of college football games this week. And we come into the weekend with 11 undefeated football teams left. Ohio State, Indiana, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, Miami, Georgia Tech, Texas Tech, BYU, Memphis, Navy, UNLV. Those are the 11 remaining undefeated teams in college football. And I got to tip my cap to Dan Mullen and the UNLV Running Rebels for still being undefeated right now. I didn't think they would be. I thought they were going to regress. I went on record as stating I don't think Mullen is as good of a coach as Odom is. So, boy, do I ever have egg on my face. But, hell of a run by UNLV. They play Boise State this weekend, too.
Crazy game last week.
At Boise.
That Air Force, that game was nuts. I'm glad we had the over.
It was a 51-48 game.
Yeah, wild stuff. No, they're excited, man. The UNLV Rebels, you're right. Like, when Mullen went there, too, because look at all the times, Gabe, we – back in the day, you know, Mississippi State and moving on and on. It's like, yeah, really? This guy's going to go to UNLV. It almost seemed like a paycheck job, but he deserves all the credit in the world. Proud of the Rebels.
Mullen, I think Mullen is a pretty good coach, actually. Like, all these college coaches all have sort of flaws and strengths. But I think Dan Mullen, he's kind of a rarity in the sense that a lot of these college coaches, they're not very good in the game, right? Like Dan Lanning's a stud and he recruits well and, you know, the Ducks and, you know what I mean? But he's still a young coach. So the clock management or like, dude, you got to use your timeout now and don't let the clock go. Like there's certain things that these coaches will do all the time. You know, Coach Moore of Michigan, same thing. I mean, this guy could recruit Jerry Rice to come out of retirement now, I think. But once he gets him on the field, he starts acting conservative and he gets weird and stuff. So, like, coaches are like players, right? They can be one way during the week, and then they get on the field, and they're a different way. Dan Mullen is actually a very good, like, in-game coach in that he rides, like, he's very emotional, but he rides with the team, and, like, he doesn't panic when they're down. Like, he's a very good coach. Mullen's knock actually at Florida was that he couldn't recruit. Right? That was the thing. They were like, yeah, he's a good coach. And, you know, during the games, he's like, he's a smart guy and he can game plan well, but he's not great at the other stuff. Like, he's not getting star players here. That's like, that was the gist of it. But at UNLV, you're not asked to get star players. So, you know, the guy's doing a great job and he's fitting in. He's become Mr. Vegas. Like, he's embraced the city and, big game for them against Boise. You know, everyone doubts UNLV all the time. I'm going to take UNLV plus the points in this game. Boise have gotten on track since that early season loss, but the spread is just, it's a little bit high, I think. So give me the UNLV running Rebels. And a couple of trends to look at for the early morning games that we're going to be on for tomorrow. Then tomorrow afternoon, we'll give you some more trends, but the Washington Huskies take on the Michigan Wolverines. Point spread is down to 4.5 right now. Washington are 1-7 against the spread, their last eight games as an underdog. Washington aren't a good underdog. If they're supposed to beat you, they will. If they're not, they won't. So Washington are 1-7 against the spread. They beat Michigan by 10 last year. Revenge spot for Michigan. Michigan are going to get it done. Vanderbilt are 13-2 straight up their last 15 home games when they are the favorite. So they're basically laying 2.5 points to LSU in this game. I'm not big on LSU. So I think Vanderbilt are actually going to win this game and beat the LSU Tigers. Houston Cougars and Arizona is a good one. Feels like a bowl game or something, that one. But
yeah, sure. I was looking. That's exactly it. It's like one of those mid-tier bowl games, early bowl
Arizona.
Games.
Yeah, Arizona go to Houston. Should be a fun game. Cougars are a good football team this year that are flying out of the radar. They've only lost one game. They got smashed by Texas Tech, but Texas Tech are dangerous and lethal. Texas Tech are a mercenary team that are actually good. It's working out for them.
Arizona gave BYU all they could handle in that game, Gabe, and we were on BYU. They went in overtime. I like Arizona in this spot. At like a pick 'em. I think the Wildcats get it done. Should be a great game.
I'm on Houston. I think Houston, I think the home field's the difference. I think the home field's the difference. And I think this Cougar team, Willie Fritz, they've scored 27 or more points in 5 or 6 games. Their defense, they run the ball. It's a, you know, it's a toss-up for a reason, but I lean with the Houston Cougars in that game. Duke Blue Devils are 5-0 to the over in their last 5 home games. So, and, you know, because I looked at that total, I'm like, damn, man, Georgia Tech and Duke is a high total. But it's high for a reason. The Duke Blue Devils, 5-0 to the over in their last 5 home games. And TCU and Baylor. I got Baylor win total over 7.5, and I don't feel good about it. They're 3-2. Every Baylor game comes down to the wire, like literally. Like, look at their games, man. It's always the last drive, one way or the other. I can see the same thing. Even though I got Baylor win total, I could kind of see TCU bouncing back. They didn't look good last week, TCU, though. But TCU are 4-1 against the spread, their last 5 as a home favorite. So my early college football bets, Houston Cougars plus 1, Arizona, Houston over 47.5, Vanderbilt minus 135 to beat LSU. Michigan minus 4.5 against the visiting Washington Huskies. And upset special, South Carolina Gamecocks plus 5.5 hosting the Oklahoma Sooners. Give me the Gamecocks plus the points, like early picks.
Yeah, we're on the same on 2 games, Gabe. I'm taking Arizona. I think that's going to be a classic. Vanderbilt money line to get it home at done against LSU. And Washington traveling all the way to the West Coast. And no, I think this is a get right spot for Michigan minus 4.5. I think they win the game by 13.
All right. So we'll be on at noon Eastern time, breaking down all the college football games. We'll have a bunch of in-depth props and trends for you to help you make money. We've been slaying college football this year, actually. I put a lot of work into it during the week, and it's paying off, actually, this year. So we're gonna get back at it. We appreciate everybody tuning into the program. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.